Women are powerful and have accomplished great things. Yet, sometimes we suffer from self-doubt, fear, and limiting beliefs. We often believe that we are not good enough. These negative beliefs stop us from achieving our goals. Welcome to Sprinting to Success, a podcast dedicated to women who have experienced struggles, yet found ways to step into their power, their greatness, and learn to embrace challenges. These women will share their stories and give you insights to help you on your path so you can follow your dreams. And now, here's your host, Esme Lawrence.
My guest was one of the first women to be promoted as business lending manager in Australian banking. She rode the career roller coaster until 2010, when she found conscious leadership. Stepping into this personal development path was the beginning of her lasting success. My guest today is Liz Hargreave. Liz, welcome to Sprinting to Success podcast. It's nice to have you on the show.
Oh, it's absolutely fabulous to be here. I'm so pleased to spend some time with you, Esme.
Right. And so where's your accent from?
Well, confused, actually. Started in New Zealand and it morphed into Australian and more recently, the UK.
Oh, the UK.
I'm in London now.
You're in London now. So what took you from New Zealand, then to Australia, then to London?
It would have to be family roots. I think my parents are Londoners and they moved to New Zealand about 13 years after the Second World War, where my sister and I were born. And I always had this feeling that I wanted to get back to the UK to really to see my grandparents, actually, who had all passed by the time I got here. But And then I found that New Zealand was not the place to earn enough money. So I jumped over the ditch to Australia and really earned well there and visited, did that year in the UK with the backpack and the combi van around Europe.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. Hmm.
So do you like the weather better in Australia compared to the UK?
Yes and no. The heat in Australia is actually too much for me. And the cold in the UK, which we're having now or beginning to have, is actually a little bit challenging. So look, on balance, I don't know. That each place has its own wonder. And the UK is an amazing place for depth of history and all sorts of things. And also as a great launching point to go into other cultures again to learn about them.
Right.
But Australia has beaches. I love beaches.
So you have to be a snowbird when it's freezing in the UK, then go to Australia.
Something like that. Yeah. It's a massive contrast, I can tell you. You know, 0 degrees to 40 degrees.
Right.
Celsius, that
definitely
is.
Definitely. I love beaches too. So, yes. So I'm going to take you back to when you were a child. What were some of the struggles that you had?
Struggles. I was the youngest of four. And probably I was a very fortunate child, actually, in that the family scenario was brilliant. My parents are great parents. And the only real struggle I had about family was being the last one. I kind of got left behind. Everyone left the home before I was ready. And so I became lonely, actually. And I think that actually continued into my more adult life, funnily enough. That was a source of sadness for me when my siblings left home.
Yeah.
And I didn't struggle at school. I was one of the, you know, fortunate ones who could do well at school. That was always great for me. I grew up in an amazing, beautiful place. It's still beautiful now, Tauranga in New Zealand, and learned a lot of great things. So struggle-wise, I really probably hit struggle when I got to Australia and had to, we'll say, assimilate, integrate, because although Australia and New Zealand are fairly similar, there's quite some different cultural aspects that actually matter, you know, and they make it quite hard for me to fit in.
So can you explain what the difference are?
That's a good question. I think the Australians, I just want to preface this by putting my, not my disclaimer, but I do want to say this. I adopted Australia as my home. And I've really felt in the end, once I'd made my adjustments, that I fitted in there better than in New Zealand. But the Australians are pretty hard. They don't take too much rubbish. And so, you know, you get on with it or you ship out.
That might be a good thing. where is it? Because New Zealand was more laid back, more easygoing.
I wouldn't say that, actually. I feel that, I don't feel that New Zealand is particularly easygoing. They're a little more British, and so there's a fair bit of you can't do that in New Zealand. That actually probably was another childhood struggle. Being the youngest, I had an older brother who would tell me, you can't do that. Okay, I better not then. You know, there's a lot of you can't do that in New Zealand. Whereas in Australia, if you do it and people don't like it, they'll just have nothing much to do with you, which is fine. You know, they make a decision to move away, but they don't tell you in that case. They just move off.
I see. Okay. So in New Zealand, they say, you can't do that. Right? So you change your ways. And in Australia, yep, just ignore you if they don't like it.
In essence, yeah.
Oh, okay. So we do that sometimes in Canada too.
Do
you? You do something and you don't like it. You know, if you really like the person, you know them, you'll tell them, right? But if it's a stranger, whatever, you just get, go your way.
Right? Yeah.
So now, as a teenager, what were some of the struggles and where were you living when you went to high school?
I was in high school in Tauranga in New Zealand. I went to a girls' school. I actually found that interesting. Turned out I really enjoyed the company more of guys than girls. And so I guess I had a bit of a friendship struggle at high school. I had some friends. It's not that I didn't. And we did nice things together. We stayed over at each other's houses and so on, but I never formed what I would call a lasting relationship with any of those girls. I really did enjoy what guys were doing. I found this is really interesting you've drawn this out.
Thank you.
It did change later, I might add, but I did get to the point of not so much in high school, but later when in Australia, I did get to the point of realizing that I was always at the end of the barbecue with the guys, whether we were cooking, not inside in the kitchen creating the salads, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that did start actually in high school in New Zealand, probably.
Right. So hanging out with the boys, like, were you like a tomboy?
A little bit, yeah. But I was feeling strong, you know. Maybe I got a bit tougher while I was in Australia, but I've always been fairly strong. I like to bushwalk. In fact, I loved to bushwalk. I don't do it now, but I used to then and loved it and did some fairly challenging hikes.
So bushwalk is like hiking? Is that what that is?
Yeah, hiking.
Okay. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, I used to be interested to pull apart cars and put them back together. Okay, getting the idea?
Exactly. So that's not a bad thing. And also fast forward to you as an adult, where you're living and what were some of the struggles that you had?
Probably, well, if I can go to about when I was about late 20s, by then I'd gone through university and I was working in one of the major banks in Australia. And I went in at the higher end of town, you know, the sort of government, institutional, large organisations kind of banking end, pretty competitive space. And I really didn't know how to do it. I think I didn't have the background of understanding of where I was to really do that well. And I felt a really strong sense of being a fish out of water. I didn't play the political game, which to me was foreign. That was a source of struggle. I did manage to get offside with various people, and that might have been the New Zealander saying, you can't do that. I can't recall, but it could have been, you know, that New Zealand culture that I carried with me. And so, yeah, that was a struggle. I actually got effectively made, not redundant, but redeployed was the word, from the institutional space to what they call it, a mid-tier kind of space. And that was a slap in the face.
What do you mean?
As a slap in the face.
Yes.
That was an insult, you know. To be downgraded effectively in that environment, that was a downgrade, and that was seen as a bit of a slight on your capacities. Right. In fact, I'm very capable, and I'm actually a very capable banker. And I was then, even at that time, but I was struggling more with my environment. And I found actually, when then redeployed to this mid-tier space, that I loved it, that I was actually really happy there. And I identified that the reason for that was because in institutional space, you're dealing with people who are employees of organisations, you know, the chief finance officer of a large corporation or some public servant who's employed by the local government. But when you get to the mid-tier space, you've got people who have family businesses and who've always, you know, been in this business. They set it up 40 years ago and they've grown it and they're still invested in it. And that was a space which was more aligned for me.
Right. Isn't it ironic how you thought that being downgraded was an insult, was a slap in the face. Yet when you actually accepted your fate, went there, you loved it.
I know. And guess what? I got called back into institutional banking. And I went, oh, blow. Oh, and it wasn't just that I thought it was a slap in the face. Everyone else did too. That was a kind of cultural thing, you know. And but then after time, I found a way out of it back into mid-tier space.
All right. Yeah. So what are some of the challenges in the banking industry?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I look at it from way back in the 1980s, and we probably don't have time to go through all that's happened in that time from then till now, but that I was the first woman into a particular field in banking. And so it was a groundbreaking time, and we, you know, didn't necessarily know how to behave, you know, how to get it right. There was no role modelling of this. We were role modelling it for people who came after us. But if I sort of come to a summary of where it is now, save the conversation being too long, I would say in the 80s, women were interlopers. And now there's a sense of equality. So that part's all good. Women behaved like men. That was me, guilty as charged. And there are still
the tomboy,
women.
The tomboy's coming out, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, again, it was because we didn't know how to do it, you know. So we didn't what we thought was right. You know, we were actually trying to behave like men because that's how we got the job in the first place. Right. If we didn't behave like a man, they wouldn't have considered we could do it. So some women still behave that way. Some women in senior roles are still living that life because that's all they've known. But fortunately, since that, other women have been able to come in and be women in these roles. And also, I think guys have learned to adjust a bit too. So the equality conversation is a lot easier now. Men to women equality. There are other conversations. Diversity, inclusion, but I'm not really dealing with that here.
Right.
But I think what really is the issue or the big challenge now is performance. And we could perform quite well back in the day in the 80s and 90s, but now people struggle with performance. And I believe that's because organisations have become highly competitive. They're structured in such ways that people are encouraged to mistrust people from the other department, to, you know, look after your own, not collaborate too much because there's risks with that. And I think that has created this really deep sort of competition. Evolved it from when I was there back in the 80s, which was also very competitive. But the competition has continued, but it's spread across the entire bank now, not just the higher end where I was working at the time. And I call it higher, bigger transactions, that's all. It's not better, just different. But the way it is so competitive and people are now really worried about their performance, because when you're in this non-supportive environment, you start to doubt your capacities. You lose your confidence, you know, and it becomes a bit of a downward spiral, which leads to poorer performance, basically. And nowadays, back in the 80s, it was okay to contribute. Your job was safe if you contributed in some notable way. Now you have to perform all of the time with ongoing goals that really get bigger and better and bigger, not better, bigger and more unachievable. So performance is the big thing, and it impacts people personally. So they just really spiral down.
So if the environment, would you say the environment is toxic?
I would say, I think of toxicity as being a kind of emotional thing between people, but maybe it could apply here. I mean, it's just not conducive to being productive, you know, and I think being productive is an uplifting kind of thing. You were an Olympic athlete, weren't you?
And yes, yes.
So you know that getting your amazing result involved all of your highest effort. It's no different really in business and in being employed. You know, your highest effort gets your best result. So if you're becoming crushed, you're going to achieve your worst result, right?
Right. And yeah. You mentioned something about women coming in acting like men. Now, what are their behaviors when they come in, you know, thinking that maybe they have to, in order to get the job done, they have to be like a man? What does this woman look like when she walks into the office?
Well, there's a good chance she wears high heels and suited. And what does she look like? Very self-assured. But it's a kind of authoritarian approach that she has. It's this thing that came out of the 80s when that was almost the style of management that we had. We were, you know, we were all the good little bankers doing what we were told. So some of these people are still behaving this way. And I think what they show nothing of really is true compassion. They may pay lip service to it, but they're not necessarily showing true compassion, I think. It's a tough gig to be at the top of an organisation or, you know, senior management with so many obligations and responsibilities and so many people and things feeding into your outcomes. So it can't be an easy ask.
Right.
I know people who have acknowledged that they've got there by playing that way, and they hope that now they can try to help others up in a different way. That's the heartening part of it.
Right. Now, is there a glass ceiling for women in banking?
No, I don't think there is really. Well, can I say my experience as Australian?
Sure.
I need to say that because because I actually think it's different in the UK. I think possibly yes, in the UK. But I haven't got inside experience on that. And I'd love to be proven wrong. I'd love someone to tell me that's wrong. I've just observed some numbers and you know, different information that I can find. And it seems that it's a bit more of a male-dominated industry here than what I'm used to. I was actually a bit disappointed by that. When I got to the UK, I thought, I'll go and work in banking. Great. You know, always wanted to work in London. And I was heading for a job the next day, preparing for it, and I wasn't feeling it. So I didn't, my husband said, don't do that. Don't go along if you're not feeling it. Just do that other thing that you want to do for women, which is basically support people in their corporate roles. So that's what I decided to do, but I did follow up with, you know, my anecdotally, and it seems it's quite difficult for women in the UK.
Right. And so are the women and men making the same wage?
No.
Definitely no.
It's about 30, I think it's actually worsened. It was about 31% different. This is across the entire employment industry, not just banking. And it's just gone up to 32% in the UK.
Wow.
So the gap is widening.
That is sad.
Yeah, it is. But people are taking action on this. So that's good. That's the good part.
In what way are they taking action?
Well, after that result came out, there are about 100 women in the UK came together and said, we're going to do something about this. We're going to effectively become a lobby group, I think. And this was a few months ago. I'd like to remember the name of it. Oh, it was like, We Too Pay or something like that. Or Me Too Pay. It might be Me Too Pay. You know the Me Too movement.
Oh, yes. Oh, we all know the Me Too movement, especially in the States, what's going on with all the sexual assaults and, you know, going to jail and people are accused of so many different things. Yeah. So this is a time that a lot of women, I notice, are speaking up, especially when it comes to sexual assault. And I see it on TV every day here in Canada and in the U.S. So so the Me Too movement in regards to getting wages, you know, equality for women. So everybody, so then there's no, then there shouldn't be a glass ceiling in regards to wages for women. So I'm glad that's actually that, you know, there's a movement for that. Now let's talk about your passion. What are your passions?
Well, I have lots, but if you're talking specifically about banking, I actually really, really love banking and I love what it can do for people. So I have a real interest in seeing the capitalist model improve. And so that's, I suppose, at a high level, that's what my life's work is. But then the way I'm doing this is really also my passion is to pass on some of the clever methods that I was able to achieve and I know other people have achieved. Or used to improve my fortunes at work. I want to pass these on to other people who are still at work.
Can you give us some of the tips of some of the things that worked for you?
I can actually. I sort of came upon this when I was really at a bit of a low with the environment that I was in. You know, I was talking about performance and I think environment is it. I was at quite a low and one day I was out with Jeff and we went for a cup of coffee or something and I happened to see a psychic card reader and I thought I'm going to go and have my cards read. You know, that sounds like fun. I think I need that. And so I went and did that. And that actually was the trigger, which took me down a path to consciousness, to becoming much more conscious about my own behavioural inputs and my own energetic inputs into situations and the flow and effect to my own results and outcomes. So it's a journey in consciousness. And I tested it out. The very first thing that I did, which got me hooked, was I was having trouble with my boss at the time, who was the authoritarian type. And he would come up behind me and kind of frighten me by his immediate presence because I didn't see him coming and challenge me on something. And his method was to challenge. He didn't ask questions, you basically tell you off first and then you had to prove what you'd done that meant you didn't warrant it.
So you were guilty.
Before anything had happened.
Before anything happened, yes.
And so because I had my back to the room, you know, the open room and the walkway and everything, and I realized from these learnings that I'd recently acquired that maybe I could change that. So I actually set up an energetic curtain behind myself. So I'll tell you how I actually did this. I went into work one day before anyone else got in, really early, so that I had space. And for 5 minutes, I worked this out. And I was sitting at my desk, and I made an intentional decision that I dropped and pretend imaginary curtain behind me, or you could say waterfall or whatever you like. Behind me, about a meter out behind my back and around all of the entry points into my desk. And I made a declaration that the people could only come through that and into my space if they were intending to work positively with me. So I kind of thought, well, this is a bit weird doing this, but it worked. It actually worked. And that first day I'd done that, I had no concerns whatsoever. Everything had gone smoothly that day. I was just able to do my work and not be harangued or harassed or bothered or, you know, told off. And so I kept that going for a while and it just changed that whole energetic interaction between myself and this boss and actually everyone else because I'd actually made it broad that it would apply to everyone. But I was really careful not to say that people couldn't come into my space, because you need people in a work environment to come to you.
Right.
But they came to me with a better mindset than they had been. Now, quite how that worked, I don't know even to this day, except I understand the energetics more now. But at that time, I just had to acknowledge it worked.
Right. Yeah. And of course, the boss is not, you know, sneaking up and trying to scare you from the back, which is good, right? So if you want to come and scare me, look at me in the eye and tell me something scary. not scaring me. And because if somebody comes and tap me on the shoulder, I jump. It's just a natural reaction.
Yeah.
You know, don't scare me. Don't creep upon me.
Yeah.
Especially in the work environment, right? You know, and don't attack me in the work environment. If you have something to say in the work environment, like, you know, be a person. Come up and, you know, and be respectful and talk about it. You know, don't accuse me. Don't scare me. Right. So I'm really glad that you found ways to, you know, kind of, you know, get rid of that nonsense in the workplace. So then, I would like for you to go back with all the knowledge you have now, go back and talk to your 7-year-old self. What would you tell her?
Yeah, I'd love to tell her that she's perfect as she is. And that probably, I think it would be good to realize that you can take the opportunities in life as they come and not worry too much about other people. Yeah. I think it's as really simple as that. I think the live life thing is my big motto that I would tell myself, which I do that now. And I did. But I think that having the confidence to actually go a little against the system is something I've developed more recently than at the time. You know, not having to fall into what a social expectation or even a marketing expectation, which I think is actually probably driving a lot of our social expectation anyway. So I'm actually no longer a slave to debt, and not because I'm wealthy, but because I made a decision not to be. And I think that was actually a very important piece that I could have learned earlier.
Right. So to not be a slave to debt, you would tell your young self. So how is it that you can free yourself from debt?
Get creative. Think of other ways. Realize that what you're fed as being the norm is not the only way. And people actually do advise you from the best of their intention and the best of their knowledge, but it doesn't mean it's the right thing. Okay, so I think the important thing is to know that the going down the debt model is not the only model, that it's you can get creative potentially and think of another way that might suit you. Is home ownership, you know, and car ownership and all of the traditional patterns what really is right for you? Yeah, I guess you ask the question of yourself. That's what I would suggest. Experts will give you the best advice that they have based on their own experiences and their own knowledge. No expert has every piece of knowledge that there is to bring to your situation. So I would say discern which is the right piece for you and go with your instinct as to what's the right piece of advice.
Right. Go with your gut instinct. And so thank you so much. Great advice. And so what would you like to share with our audience today?
Well, someone brought up something the other day and I thought this is really interesting. This friend is someone who is quite an achiever in banking. And she said to me that a friend of hers or someone she knows in banking, a colleague, beat her to the next promotion. And my friend wanted to be really happy for this other person, but she really struggled to be happy for this other person because she wanted that role for herself.
Yes.
And it made me question what she could have perhaps done differently to make that less of an issue for her. And I realized actually the sort of work that I do is probably one potential answer, where my friend could have set her heart on this goal and this role, I should say, and she should, you know, she wants this role, she should go for it, aim for it, much as you did for that medal that you got in the games, you know, you really go for it, focus on it.
The medal was during the Commonwealth Games.
Oh, Commonwealth Games, yes. Sorry, my
that's
mistake.
Okay. No, that's okay, that's fine.
I think they're all amazing.
Yes, me too.
And And then you could choose which way you go with this. You could choose how to handle what comes next after you've gone through all the processes of, you know, working for, knowing what you want to achieve and studying for the role and putting your best self forward and so on. You can put yourself forward and maneuver and play politics and, you know, be self-satisfied when you win and really disappointed and crushed when you lose or you don't win the role. Or you could, instead, you could put your best self forward in all the ways that you can and trust that the right outcome will happen and be happy for the right outcome to happen, whatever it is. And then if that right outcome is that you win the role, you can know that it's the right role and it's the right outcome. And if the outcome, if it happens that you don't win the role, that also is the right outcome. And you can actually be happy with that because you realized that you'd let it take its course and the right outcome happened. And then probably the best part of that is that if you have lost the role or not won the role, it actually keeps you open for the next opportunity, which could be even better.
Right.
And my experience, that's what happens. You, for some reason, you are diverted from that one. There will actually be a better one, not too far around the corner.
Right. Yeah, actually, it's really tough to, when you look at, for instance, you know, your friend wanted a role and somebody else got it. It's for some people, it's really tough to be happy for that person. Mm. But you're right. You have to be happy for that person because it wasn't, that job wasn't meant for you.
That's right.
Or that situation wasn't meant for you. So be happy for that person and then move on and wait your turn. Your turn will come. And, you know, so yeah, it's best to be happy for someone and be, you know, and be happy because they're happy and not, you know, feel, oh, jealous. Because jealousy will it'll get you nothing. It'll get you nowhere. And, you know, it just makes you, you know, go in a deeper pit.
That's right.
Because it brings up all of other negative, you know, things, right? But yeah, be happy and thankful, you know, and then move on.
Right? Because the better opportunity is yet to come. That's what I think is the key.
Right. Better opportunity is yet to come. So for people out there listening, you didn't get that job, you know, it's okay. Better opportunity is coming your way. So thank you so much for being with us today. And I love it. You had some really great things to say. And I really think that, you know, it's really good when you go and you share your message about banking and some of the lessons that you've learned.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Esme. It's been really nice to chat with you and also to bring up some of those things I've forgotten about.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So yeah. Thank you so much.
And I'm really delighted to share these things because I really do care that people in banking, actually in the corporate system altogether, do have their career without losing their soul. And that's what we're bringing. That's my mission and what I bring to the world now. So thanks for the opportunity to put it forward.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for listening to Sprinting to Success podcast.
I'm Liz Hargraves, and I guess I'm sprinting to success with Esme Lawrence.
Oh, thank you so much, Liz. And for more information about Liz, go to esmelawrence.com. Thank you and have an amazing day.
Thank you for listening to Sprinting to Success with your host, Esme Lawrence. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes. For more information about Esme and to hear other episodes of the show, go to esmelawrence.com. The information in this podcast is not intended as a substitute for professional or medical treatment or advice. Always seek advice from your healthcare provider.